Mr. Joginder Singh will too.
As far as the nature of the work is concerned, in the beginning it was just attending parades in the evenings. And when we had to undergo concentrated training, well, we used to get up early morning, attend PT, physical training, and after that we had our breakfast, and then we had to put on our uniform and go into parade. That would be followed by lectures or training in our signal work. That would take us to midday. We would have our lunch. There would be a break until the evening of 4 o'clock or so. We would have another session. And then that would finish until the end of the day. Except those boys who had to take their turn to do fire pickets, that means work. In case a fire broke out, well, they would go and attend to the putting out of fire.
During your weekly training, how many hours did you have to spend there?
No, we remained in camp. We were not allowed to go home, and only going home was at weekends. Saturdays from 1, we would take a pass to go and come back by midnight on Sunday.
That was for your 3-week training. What about your normal weekly training?
Weekly training is just a matter of about 2 hours work. Attending parades is about, say, from between 4 to 6.
And it was during your weekly training that you learned how to handle a rifle?
Oh, yes.
Who taught you during how to handle the rifle?
Well, yes, although the overall command was in the hands of the lieutenant, Mr. Reeves, we had our sergeants. We had a sergeant, B.S. Niker, who was in civil life, working the postal and telegraphs, the postal department. But then when it came to concentrated training, in addition to that, the training was taken over by the Army Sergeant and Swiss Sergeant Battle.
How was the relationship like among the people who were in the signal section?
We just see, Malacca town is quite small, and within a matter of a few days we became very chummy. Relationship was very cordial, and I don't remember of any misunderstanding between anyone at all.
What about relationship with the other people in the A Company, B Company, C Company, and
the relationship with them was just casual, I should say. We in our signals, we shared a hut with the medical unit, and somehow or other, most of the signalers and most of the medical men happened to be Indians. So there's no problem whatsoever. We had in the signals 3 or 4 Chinese people, and they got on very nicely with us.
When you said that you share a hut with the medical people, was that during the 3-week training?
You see, that was, yes, 3-week training.
Did you have...
In Singapore, we had our own tents, and there were 6 or 7 to a tent.
Sharing a hut was in Malacca,
yes.
Jasin. Did you have opportunity to mix with the signalers from the Singapore Volunteer Corps of Penang?
Oh, in Singapore, yes, we had at one time to come down and say for a training exercise. We left by train, landed at Johor Bahru, and that's where we were strafed, because we found the attacking section, And Singapore boys were the defenders. And the fight that we had took place in a rubber estate in Mandai area. Well, I don't think there was any damage done to any of the attackers or the defenders, but the estate suffered in a few rubber latex cups being broken, for which, well, the volunteers had to make good.
Besides being involved in mock battle, did you have any opportunity to mix with them outside of?
No, not outside. No, not outside. Except that at the end of the exercise, we had our dinner in the in Beach Road camp, and that is the only time we had that few minutes to talk or just with one another. And immediately after that, we boarded. We got into buses, into our lorries, and to the railway station, and came back to Mecca and went back to Mecca.
At the time when you first joined the Malacca Volunteer Corps, did you think you would really be involved in a war?
No, yes. Not at all. Even up to the declaration of emergency on the 1st of December 1941, it never occurred to anyone that there would really be, well, fighting in this part of the world. It's only when that elderly gentleman, the interpreter, Mr. Wong Kun Yun, came back after having made the announcement that emergency had broken out and all in the enlisted personnel had to report to their camps or respective units, the look on his face showed that something serious had taken place.
When did you know why the emergency was declared?
The declaration of the emergency could have been due because the British intelligence reported the movement of the Japanese fleet southwards.
At what time was it declared on the 1st of December? At what time was it declared on the 1st of December?
And then the time? No, it was no matter. Well, in Malacca it was broadcast about 10 o'clock in the morning on the 1st of December. And that night we boarded the trains and the next morning we Singapore.
Was that declaration for the whole of Malaya and Singapore?
Well, since it was being done in Singapore, very likely it would have been between Malaya also. There's no point in having a declaration in first about 8-7 or so many hundred miles south when and leaving the Malaya out when the Japanese fleet was nearer to them.
Could you tell us how did you receive the news of the declaration?
Well, in more or less, being young, about just 22 years old, or say 21, 20, well, I don't know, well, the reaction was not as, well, serious as those who were maybe about 35 or 40 years old, as I affected them. Because in those cases, they would be thinking, what would happen to our wives and children? But that sort of responsibility was not on our shoulders then. It is true that we felt a little out of sorts and about numb, not knowing how to react to it.
Did you get the news over the radio?
Well, you see, as I said, at that time I was in the office. I did hear the public address system broadcasting some music, and then there was a break in the music. Some announcements were being made, but since we were in the office, we could not clearly make out what those announcements were. It's only when Mr. Wong came that we knew what it actually was.
How did Mr. Wong receive the news?
Yes, sir. It could be, I'm just guessing, it could be that the Malacca radio station broadcasting station would have telephoned to the registry of the High Court And the registrar there sent a thambi, office boy, down to the various interpreters to immediately report to the broadcasting house to make an important announcement.
How did he tell you the news?
Well, when he came back, he looked straight in my direction and said, "You, what are you doing here? Did you not hear the broadcast? Go back home, put on your uniform and report to your unit." He more or less shouted at me.
Did you go back immediately after?
Oh yes, I did. I then put into my uniform, gathered the other part of the uniform that I had access, and went back to camp.
Did your family members know what was happening?
You see, at that time, I was on my own. My parents had come back, and I had been transferred out of Malacca to Singapore.
When you reported back to the headquarters at Malacca, what happened after that?
You see, it was a case of some having reported first, others later, and the whole thing was more or less disorderly until towards the evening when we received instructions, "Now start getting ready, this evening you will be leaving for Singapore."
So when you reported to the headquarters, you had to wait there until the others came?
Yes.
While waiting there, what was the atmosphere?
Well, I don't remember what happened. It wasn't just common, just commonplace talk, or just having to a talk got to do with the announcement. And no one was said. No one would have been certain as to what was going to happen.
Were there any anticipation as to what would happen?
Well, nobody would have at that time and known what could happen. All they knew, they had to put on a uniform, and nobody even expected the Japanese to come to this area.
How were you sent to Singapore?
From Malacca town, we boarded into our lorries and came as far as Tampin, I think, and from there we took train.
Did the whole battalion come to Singapore?
Yes, the whole battalion. And having got off, we were billeted in St. Patrick's School tuck shop, as far as my unit is concerned. The others were also in that area.
Why did they send the entire Malacca Volunteer Corps to Singapore?
Well, at that time, the defense of Singapore was supposed to be far of greater importance than anything else.
Did Mr. Scott and Mr. Reese come down to Singapore?
Oh yes,
as well?
All of them did.
When you reached Singapore, was St. Patrick's School the first place that you went to?
St. Patrick's School, yes.
When you reached there, could you describe to us what did you see at the school?
At that time, school holidays had already commenced. And other than we occupying that tuck shop and that area, well, there was nobody else. The main road was a little away from us. And we were to ourselves up to the 8th. It is true that 2 or 3 days earlier, while roaming about in the beach, looking the direction of the far out in the sea, we did see two big ships going towards the direction of Changi. And it was later on that we realized that this was the Prince of Wales and the Repulse, just reaching Singapore. On the 8th morning, well, we were awakened by the sound of the sirens and the bombs. And about 6 a.m. in the morning, well, when the radio was turned on, we came to know what actually had taken place. Just beside the school happened to be a Japanese fishing village. And as soon as the war had, well, been there, well, Singapore had been bombed, well, and the administration knew that war had come, the Japanese in the village were rounded up. While here we, just, they were just by our side, and we could see lorry loads of them being taken away. And somehow or other, by the evening, we saw a Japanese flag placed on the culvert just outside on the main road.
Placed on the?
A Japanese flag was placed. Who placed it, we would not know. Whether it was done by somebody out of mischief or deliberately left there, I won't know. But then, it was there.
Outside the school?
Outside the school and on the main road, just on the top of the railing of the culvert.
When did you reach St. Patrick's School?
It could have been about 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning.
On the 2nd of December. How did you know where to report to?
My pardon?
How did you know where to report to on reaching Singapore?
Since we were just privates, all arrangements had been made by the officers and whatnot. And when our unit has, they would have been in contact with one another over the telephone.
Did the entire MVC went to St. Patrick's School or only the signals unit?
Well, I think all of us.
So where did you put up?
Just in the, as far as we are concerned, the signalers and the medical unit and the signalers were in the tuck shop. Of course, there are other classes available for the others.
What were all of you supposed to do in Singapore?
Well, we would not know as it is. We thought it was just formed just to increase the number of people here. But then later on, yes, we did have to go around like those in the infantry unit. Those in the had to go to the beaches to lay out barbed wire to prevent, well, enemy from landing and coming on to the beaches. Well, the others had the various types of work to attend to. But as far as the signalers were concerned, we did not have anything yet got to do until the fighting had actually come within Singapore.
So during the period when you reached Singapore and the period when you were involved, what were you doing?
More or less attending, yes, what we used to do in Malacca. We had a PT, and then we had our breakfast, and then we had a little bit of this training, and then lunch, and that's about all. But we did not have any period of concentrated period of work to do.
The training that you had, was it signals training or arm training?
Signaling.
Were you allowed to move out of St. Patrick's School and roam around Singapore?
No. We were not. We had a sentry, we had our own sentry presence out, and nobody could leave. It became what was the school became a restricted area. Just nobody could either go come in without a pass or go out.
So, between the 2nd of December and the day the fighting started in Singapore, all of you remained in St. Patrick's School?
Doing almost nothing.
But the other units, the infantry, they were allowed, they were moved about in Singapore.
Which one?
The,
oh, the Malacca volunteers? No, all of us were like that.
What about those in the infantry? You mentioned that they went to the beaches for to help in the defense.
You see, these people, I mean the infantry, but they, the boys could not do what they like. Well, they were all bound under orders. And it is when the officer gave an order, well, they would have to obey. And I did not notice any such orders being given for them to do anything at all while we were there. But subsequently, yes, they were, well, marched off to do to other work. They had to go to the beaches to lay barbed wire, or they would have to go and perform sentry duties elsewhere. But those were things which took place away from us, so we would not know. Our boys, the signalers, did also have to go. And once in a while, when they came back, they reported, oh, while they were bombed, so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so, well, were injured, or so-and-so died.
Can you remember roughly when did the first people were sent out to help in this kind of work?
You see, what I'll say is, from St. Patrick's too, we were later on moved out to Kampong Batak, that is off Jalan Yunus. And while we were at Kampong Batak, we were bombed on more than one occasion. And it was from this Kampong Batak that our boys would be sent out to perform this either guarding or cable or this barbed wire laying work in the Changi area.
Could you remember when did you move out to Kampong Batak?
Well, we would have been there for a few more days after the 8th. In fact, before, by the 15th of December, we would have gone out.
Of St. Patrick's School to Kampong Batak?
By the 15th of December, we would have moved out from there to go to Jalan University, Kampong Batak.
Between the 2nd and 15th of December, how was the atmosphere in St. Patrick's School like?
Well, for the up to the 8th, well, it was more or less, that is, doing nothing. But from the 8th, well, things were entirely different. We were more sober. And on the morning of the 8th, well, those boys who had got somehow from us who had gone to hospital for medical treatment came back with rumors of what they saw, of seeing headless bodies, dismembered bodies, confusion in a general hospital, and such things.
After the first air raid on Singapore, when you received the news, what were your reactions?
Well, at first nobody knew for certain what it was. All that we knew was, oh, yes, we could see the planes, we could hear the planes, we could hear, well, the bombs dropping and all that. But then it was later on when the radio broadcast was such and such a place had been bombed, such and such a place had been bombed. Then we knew that the magnitude of the raids or the area that had covered. But towards about 10 o'clock in the 11 o'clock when the boys had gone to hospital, came back, then we would say, we were told that, oh, they had seen bodies without heads, body of limbs, and the whole place is in a state of running about here, there, and everything is in confusion. Then we realized that things were not that calm, or that things were not that easy. And then war did have bring about its first miseries.
That was on the 8th of December,
1941.
You mentioned that you saw the Prince of Wales and the Repulse. Did you know that it was... did you receive any news of its sinking?
It's only after then. We knew that these things... Well, we had seen, we had seen a lot of destroyers in the waters just far away. And we, from the size of these things, these ships, we knew that they were not of the destroyer class, they were something bigger than that. It's later on from the newspapers that we knew that those two ships we had, who had gone in were in fact the Prince of Wales and the Repulse.
Did you know about their being sunk by the Japanese?
Well, we did read in the newspapers.
So what were all of your reactions to that news?
Well, we just finished school, and then what we knew in those days was, well, when a ship sank, the captain normally sank with the ship or the last man to leave the ship. In this case, when these ships went down, their commander, Admiral Tom Phillips, he did not leave the ship. And they said, he remained true to the British spirit of a ship captain remaining behind.
After the first air raid, you obviously still remained in St. Patrick's School. So while there, did any of you make any kind of preparations for the war? Or did you still hope that the war would not come to Singapore at all?
The only thing we had been told that when the bombs or when, we had the town, the Singapore, I mean island or town, had been prepared with the air raid system. Well, when the planes were far away, the blast over the air side and was of a particular type, when they were nearer, well, the tone of the blast, the siren, was different. And after that, when the planes had gone away, the siren was just one long blast. We know that now the planes had gone. Now, and then we had also been instructed that when the bombs start dropping or when they are overhead from the siren, lie flat on the ground. Plug the ears with the arms and just.
What about any other kind of preparations made by the MVC?
Yeah, there were certain trenches made so that when the raids took